I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Senator John McCain's body will lie in state at the state capitol in Arizona tomorrow, followed by a memorial service on Thursday. On Friday, he will lie in state at the U.S. Capitol, followed by a memorial service on Saturday at the National Cathedral, where Presidents Bush and Obama will deliver eulogies. And on Sunday, there will be a private memorial service and burial at the U.S. Naval Academy. Much has been said about McCain in the last few days, from the reporters who covered him, the senators who served with him, lauding his courage, his crankiness, his certitude, and willingness to break with his party, work across the partisan divide, change his mind, and apologize. He was a complicated man, and we want to shed light on his contradictions, his policy positions, his choice of Sarah Palin as his running mate, and what his absence will mean for the GOP and the U.S. Senate. We have three guests who have joined us. Wendy Schiller is chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. She served on the staffs of Senator Patrick Moynihan and Governor Mario Cuomo. She's the author of a number of books, including Electing the Senate. Wendy Schiller, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be here.
Dick Pullman is with us here in our Philadelphia studio. He writes the National Interest column for WHYY News, and he's been writing about the 2018 midterms for The Atlantic, writer-in-residence at the University of Pennsylvania. Dick Pullman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
And joining us by phone is Mickey Edwards. He was a Republican congressman from Oklahoma for 16 years, from 1976 to 1993, and was chairman of the House Republican Policy Committee. And Mickey Edwards, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. Thanks.
Nice to have all three of you with us. And let me just give out the various ways that our listeners can join our conversation. You can call us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Mickey Edwards, let me begin with you. How do you explain, I guess, this outpouring of, it's not exactly grief, but certainly tributes, wall-to-wall coverage of John McCain in the last couple of days, the laying in state, the National Cathedral, the presidents will speak at his memorial service. What do you make of this response?
Well, John was unique, you know, in many ways. He was just like all of us. You know, he did things right and he did things wrong. But when he was faced with really dire circumstances, when he, for example, when he was in Vietnam, but also when he stood up to the woman who was starting to trash Barack Obama in the middle of a campaign, when he could have done what other people might have done and to appeal to that base. I mean, he had a way of coming back and recognizing, I did something wrong, and I'm going to make up for it, and I'm going to apologize for it. So he was able to always fall back on his basic principles, just like when he was being held at the Hanoi Hilton and was offered a chance. I mean, he was being tortured, and he was offered a chance to be let go. And he said, no. The standard is you're released in the order in which you were captured, and I'm not going to change that and give the enemy a PR weapon. And so this is what was unique about him. Not that he was perfect, he wasn't a saint, but that he recognized when he made a mistake, and he kept coming back to the basic principles that he lived by. And I think that was a very unique thing about him that we have too little of in our political world today.
Well, let me pick up on that and toss that to you, Wendy Schiller. Do you think that, especially with what appears or feels often like just this torrent of bad and controversial news, whether there was this desperation or is this desperation to laud someone who was truly human?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that it's a fairly remarkable amount of ceremony for John McCain, and I do think it has a lot to do with honoring the way he conducted himself, mostly since he lost the presidency. He was a sort of a maverick conservative senator. He was a congressperson, and then he was a senator. And when he first got elected, he basically paid attention to Arizona, and he voted the party line, except when he bucked President Reagan by repealing the Catastrophic Act, which was passed under Reagan, because, you know, wealthier seniors receiving Medicare didn't want to pay those premiums for that bill. He led the charge to repeal it, and he succeeded. And it sort of cemented him as somebody who was going to do what he wants, what he thought he should be doing for his constituents. And then even the Keating Five scandal didn't really touch him the same way. He wasn't quite as involved, but he was acting on behalf of an Arizona constituent. So the way he morphed his whole career and achieved national prominence, I think, culminated in the last 10 years as an elder statesman in American politics.
Well, Dick, let me turn to you. You covered John McCain, interviewed him. You were one of those reporters on the bus. Help us understand the response of so many of the reporters to his death. And I've seen them getting teary-eyed and very emotional and not that kind of objectivity that we often associate or sometimes associate with reporters.
Yeah, well, I think it was two things. He was not a programmed politician. I mean, so much of the time, reporters in Washington, especially on the national level, everybody has their talking points, predictable talking points. They never change. They're not reflective, and they kind of soldier through contradictions and hypocrisies, if I may call it that. And what McCain did, and this felt very genuine, was that he would confess error. He would confess to things that he didn't know about, even big issues. And that was kind of unique. You know, reporters aren't used to politicians just sort of even confiding with them, albeit on the record, about their flaws. And, you know, so that was kind of in some ways attractive. There was a time when I remember, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I was on the so-called Straight Talk Express in the 2000 primaries. A couple times. And what I remember most was that a couple of us asked him about health care whether there should be any kind of universal health care. And his answer, he immediately said, well, you know, I really don't know much about health care. It's just kind of – it's really complicated and it's just not my thing, and I'm paraphrasing. But that was pretty much – and he went on in that vein for a while, and we were all like – you know, wow, he said he doesn't know stuff. And he also started talking about the economy that way. He doesn't know much about economics and everything. And sure enough, I guess, you know, in 2008, when the Lehman Brothers thing happened in September of 2008 and the economy crashed, he was kind of, you know, he didn't really know what to do. And it was and we felt we had an understanding that we would have from not a lot of politicians. About that. And frankly, the other thing was he was very accessible.
Yeah.
And, you know, reporters do appreciate it when politicians are willing to talk with them and spar with them. And, you know, he would get mad and it didn't matter. You know,
it wasn't personal.
He would just keep going. And so I think a lot of journalists appreciated that.
Well, in 2008, he called reporters jokingly my base. But nonetheless, do you think they were too close, Dick, briefly?
Yeah.
They liked him too much.
Yeah. You know, I did. I think they got, you know, I don't want to, you know, be too blankety about this thing. But I think there was a danger in that. Sometimes with too much accessibility, you lose a little bit of your critical faculty. And, you know, they liked him personally, and that might have influenced things on the margins. And the other thing, frankly, about the Straight Talk Express in 2000, yes, he was comfortable with reporters. Yes, he liked talking with us and sparring with us. But frankly, he was up against George W. Bush's money machine, and that's where all the donors were going. He didn't have much money to compete, so he needed the free media to try to level the playing field.
Let me play a clip, and this actually takes us up to last summer, 2017, July 25th, speaking about health care, and Senator McCain speaking on the Senate floor. And this was after his thumbs down no vote on repealing the Affordable Care Act. Let's give it a listen.
Our deliberations can still be important and useful, but I think we'd all agree they haven't been overburdened by greatness lately. And right now, they aren't producing much for the American people. Both sides have let this happen. Let's leave the history of who shot first to the historians. I suspect they'll find we all conspired in our decline, either by deliberate actions or neglect. We've all played some role in it. Certainly I have. Sometimes I've let my passion rule my reason. Sometimes I made it harder to find common ground because of something harsh I said to a colleague. Sometimes I wanted to win more for the sake of winning than to achieve a contested policy.
Mickey Edwards, can you respond to that?
Yeah, I've been listening, of course, to what everybody's saying. And one of the things that always really bothered me was that that John was called a maverick. Because what did it mean to be a maverick? It meant to listen to your own beliefs and your own principles. It meant to listen to your constituents, and that you weren't going to do whatever your party dictated or whatever the president dictated. And that's what everybody should do. And so he was called a maverick because he did what we should have expected of all of our political leaders. And this was a case where he was willing to stand. I mean, the Senate's only 100 people, right? The House of Representatives is about the size of my high school graduating class. It's a little, you know, buddies. And to stand up there in front of them and to say, none of us have covered ourselves with glory, is, I mean, it may sound like a soundbite to other people, but he's standing there in front of people he goes to work with every day and sometimes campaigns with, sometimes against, you know, but his friends. And that's kind of why he stands out. It's because he was willing to do not something strange, but he was willing to do something that they all should have been doing, and we all know they weren't.
Well, Wendy, what I appreciate is, and I think we have largely forgotten that Senator John McCain represented Arizona, and that that's the lens in which we can understand a number of his positions, including the fact that I'm sure it was more than this, but the fact that he was a hawk in many ways. Can you speak to that?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you had, before even the merger, you had Grumman and Northrop and most defense contractors, pretty large presence in Arizona. So it made perfect sense, given his military, obviously his Navy background, to be in support of the military and in support of defense contracting. And he was smart about his committee choices and certainly rising the ranks of the Armed Services Committee. So he stayed, like the other speakers have said, with what he knew. And that was also quite good for Arizona. So he never faced, I didn't see at least in all of his career, a conflict, right? So some senators represent their states, and maybe they're a little to the left, a little to the right ideologically, but more importantly, they don't advocate strongly for the things that matter to their states, but John McCain did. And even, you know, more recently, he sort of said, hey, climate change is something to worry about because Arizona, you know, gets all of its water from other states and needs the climate to be stable. And so for him, everything tied back, I think, in some way, really sensibly, to Arizona, a state he loved and he loved serving. So for him, he didn't face the same kinds of conflicts, I think, that other senators did face who sort of don't represent their state as closely as some people would hope they would.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Wendy Schiller. She's chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Dick Pullman here with us in our Philadelphia studio, writes the National Interest column for WHYY News and has been writing about the 2018, I should say, midterms for the Atlantic. And Mickey Edwards, a former Republican congressman from Oklahoma. We are remembering Senator John McCain. We want to hear from you. How do you assess his years in Congress and the things that he did and didn't do? 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and today on the show, talking with Dick Pullman, Mickey Edwards, and Wendy Schiller about John McCain. You all have referenced this maverick description that has been attached to John McCain for some time now, and I think all use quotations around it, which is important. Doesn't necessarily work on the radio. But one of the things, Dick, that you wrote in your piece yesterday about John McCain was that, okay, he was called a maverick, but he voted with Bush 95% of the time. I voted with Trump 83% of the time. Why was he called this maverick, does that really distract us from who he was essentially as a true conservative?
Yeah, I mean, also he was ranked as late as 2005. He was ranked as the third most conservative senator in the chamber by VoteView.com, just to give the link.
Sure.
I always put the word maverick when I would write about him. I'd always put the word maverick in quote marks. Because of those things, and because frankly he you know, he had to pay attention increasingly to, maybe he had no choice, you know, to the Republican base, which was getting more and more conservative, you know, and frankly was, it's the same, you know, if you follow it through, that's one of the reasons that Trump got elected in 2016. And that he had to contend with that base in Arizona. It was very strong. And in 2010, for example, he had a very strong primary challenger, Republican primary challenger, a conservative talk show guy named J.D. Hayworth, former congressman. And he had to move sharply to the right. And so a lot of the things that he was sort of known for as maverick positions, by 2010 he was abandoning because he had to get reelected. Mm. And, you know, there's no use going through the list, but there was quite a long list. I think he started to get – I think he was called a maverick or, as Sarah Palin called him, mavericky, because he was very good, I think, at cherry-picking some marquee issues that got a lot of press, particularly things like campaign finance reform and climate change, mm-hmm. early on, as early as 2000. And I'm not saying he didn't believe in those things. I'm not saying it was totally cynical. But, he was able, I think, to sort of at the time – everything's timing in politics. And at the time when it was good to sort of put those out there – and to show some independence, he did. But, you know, when he needed to, and he frequently needed to, he would sometimes even use the media as a foil, you know. And it's like if the press got mad at him for doing things that looked like hypocrisy, then that was actually – that played well with the base when he needed to survive in Arizona primaries.
Well, let's talk about his pick of Sarah Palin. Yeah. And, I mean, many people talk about – this independent streak and this maverick. And it was clear, Mickey Edwards, that he actually wanted Joe Lieberman. At least that was something he thought about for some time. He picked Sarah Palin. I think in many ways we paid the price for that ever since. But what does that tell us about John McCain?
Well, one of the things that everybody's tried to say, well, there was some kind of a strategy here, and he was appealing to a certain kind of a base by picking to her. Now, you know, John, I served in the House with John. I mean, a great guy, but he was impetuous. He was impulsive. He would he could have easily, you know, seen a video of Sarah. People told him about it. He heard her speak, whatever, and he said, "Oh, I like her," and goes with that. I mean, he was somebody who went by gut instinct, and he did tend to be impetuous. That's one reason why he may have been a better senator than he would have been a president. I think a lot started listening to the conversation, and I think there are a couple of things when we talk about his being a member. You know, one of the things that you're supposed to do is to listen to your constituents. You know, that's not, you know, being somehow a sellout or whatever, playing games. That's part of our system, is you listen to your constituents and you take them seriously. And so I think there's too much tendency to try to read into what every member of a legislative body does some kind of a big secret thing. I mean, no, you represent your constituents. You try to stand up for what you think is right. And so when he did these things that are very conservative, well, he was a conservative guy. I mean, he believed them. He wasn't catering to somebody. He was doing what he thought was right.
Well, Wendy Schiller, I know you have to leave us in just a couple of minutes, but I'd be curious about your thoughts about him, meaning John McCain, picking Sarah Palin to be his vice president.
Well, I mean, this is the person who could have taken over the presidency. It was just a very bad case of vetting. He wasn't served very well by his advisors, and he didn't really think ahead. I mean, for a guy who had sort of taken all these bold steps in his career, you know, picking Joe Lieberman or picking somebody like that would have been extremely bold, and he didn't want to take the risk. And yes, did it create a phenomenon that led maybe to the mobilization of people who had the Tea Party in 2010, and then the people who voted for Donald Trump were on the really sort of avid side of the Republican Party in terms of extreme conservative views, yes, but that trend was happening with or without Sarah Palin. So I don't think we can sort of say, well, if there was no Sarah Palin, there would have been no Donald Trump. I just think he could have taken that decision more seriously and, more importantly, taken the kind of risk that he had shown in his whole career. And the other thing is, I guess I was trying to point out the fact that John McCain is being lauded by quite a few liberals and a lot of people who are really saying, yes, he stood up to Trump. But he was a very conservative man, and his policy positions were antithetical to what most liberals really want to see from the government. So it's a little bit, if you've watched politics long enough, it's a little bit jarring to hear such enormous praise for the man, obviously his character, but given that he objected to a lot of what liberals wanted in terms of policy, and yes, that was his set of views, and also the people he represented in Arizona, which weren't everybody in Arizona, but it was certainly the base that voted for him. So I think that is something that is a little bit confusing, I think, for those of us who've watched politics for a long time.
Let me play the clip that I guess everyone will recognize. This is candidate John McCain at a town hall meeting 2008 responding to a woman asserting that Barack Obama was an Arab.
I got to ask you a question. I do not believe in, I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
Mickey Edwards, I think that speaks to what you were talking about. Obviously, he said the right thing.
Right.
But I think he has been put on a pedestal for essentially saying the right thing.
Well, and that's what's so sad about it, is that we should be expecting, you know, all political leaders to do. And, you know, anybody who was running should have done that. But, you know, I've run for office, and there is this terrible pull when you're standing in front of an audience to forget about all the other people who may be watching from far away. You want to please the people who are in front of you, and it is a terrible temptation. And the fact that he did that, and we should have expected that of any, you know, decent person to stand up and say that this is nonsense, but he did it, and an awful lot of other people would have found some way to finesse it and not say that, not publicly disagree with somebody who was thinking about voting for him. And so it's a shame that that is such a rare thing, but he deserves the praise for the fact that he was willing to do things like that.
Wendy, I know you have to leave us. Anything you want to say before you go?
Well, just lovely that we should admire the fact that the man had character and he was honest and he served his country and he devoted his whole life to serving his country. And I think for that, we should not only be grateful, but also hope that future people emulate him in that way and that he's an example of what the best of America can be.
Well, Wendy Schiller, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University, Dick Pullman, staying with us for the rest of the hour. And he writes the National Interest column for the for WHYY News. And he's been writing about the 2018 midterms for The Atlantic. He's also writer in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. And Mickey Edwards joining us by telephone. He was a Republican congressman from Oklahoma for 16 years, from 76 to 93. And he served as chairman of the House Republican Policy Committee. You can join us 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dick, I know you want to say something, but let me just frame it slightly. So we hear John McCain telling that woman, no, President Obama is a good candidate Obama is a good family man. He's not an Arab. Nonetheless, he picked Sarah Palin, who talked about palling around with terrorists. And
right.
Well, and just
you took the words right out of my mouth.
Sorry,
I remember that's fine.
But just
palling
kind of
around
feeding
with terrorists.
This notion that Barack Obama was the other.
Right. And you know, and I think what at the time, if I remember correctly, what at the time was, it was like, I mean, that goes to, it looks like a contradiction, obviously, and it looks like a contradiction, I guess it is, that McCain's 2008 slogan was country first. And to put someone a heartbeat away who is, frankly, the know-nothing version of Donald Trump, it seemed to undercut the slogan and undercut his deepest convictions. Now, you know, I know obviously politics is more complicated than that, and I think if you look at the book, Game Change is a good place to look at, which had all that inside dope. You know, she had her entourage and some advisors from the McCain staff who couldn't keep a leash on what she was saying. And, you know, it's probably stuff that McCain, like palling around with terrorists, that he would not have wanted her to say, but it was already, you know, left her mouth and it got reported. But it left the impression that they just did not have their act together in that campaign. Mm-hmm. And I think that ill-served him too.
But Mickey Edwards, do you think that it sort of fed a white nationalist part of the country that we hear more and more these days?
I'm not inclined to think that what he did there was, you know, created, you know, all what we have now. But you know, it was a terrible mistake. I mean, it was a terrible mistake, and I was shaken by him picking her, and I thought it was. But as I said, you know, John, for all of his strengths, he did. I mean, you saw this in Congress, in the House too. I mean, he just was impulsive, and he could say, "Oh, I like that person. You know, I it sounds good to me." And the idea that there was not sufficient vetting doesn't surprise me, because he just was somebody who went with his gut instincts. I think too often, I was bothered by that, and I was not totally surprised that he would make a decision that rashly.
Let me read some comments. John McCain had a quality of being principled, which is not a word you hear much anymore. Stood by what he believed was right, whether it was convenient or not. That's something we need in politics now. Facebook comment from Bill. He was a warmonger to the end. An email from Dan. John McCain is a war hawk. He never met a war he didn't like. An email from Mary. I was an Army nurse and Vietnam veteran stationed in San Francisco when the POWs returned. I've watched him evolve over the last 30 years and evolved into a true statesman. I admired his beginning to live the true dream of duty, honor, and country. He began to see that putting our nation and her citizens first was more important than partisan politics, an important message for us today. Reading over his life, and I'll put this first to you, Mickey Edwards, he apologized a lot, and we don't, you know, it's not easy to apologize. When he was running and was in South Carolina, it was a pretty terrible experience that he had down there, to put it lightly. But he did not stand up to the Confederate flag. And then he said, I had not just been dishonest. I'd been a coward, and I had severed my interests from my country's. That was what made this lie unforgivable. All my heroes, fictional, unreal, would have been ashamed of me, when he did not stand up to criticizing the Confederate flag. Should we be surprised that he was such an apologizer?
Well, To some extent. I mean, you know, he, as I keep saying, I mean, he was human, and there was some really good thing that he would apologize for these mistakes, but it also served him well. You know, it created this impression of somebody who truly, you know, was regretful of some of this. So it's just like with the Keating Five. He wasn't seriously involved. He made a mistake, maybe an inadvertent mistake, by going to the meeting. But how did he deal with this? His political problem was he'd been, you know, caught up in this Keating Five thing. And so what does he do? He says, okay, I'm now going to be the champion of campaign finance reform. It was a good thing to do, but it also served a politically useful purpose. And so you know, he was human. I mean, he also thought strategically as well as, you know, trying to do the right thing. And he had principles and he fell back on his principles. But he also he was not above thinking strategically about things.
Go ahead, Dick.
I'll give you another guess of what everything Mickey said. I'll give you another example of when he did the apology, the impulsiveness and then the apology. Was he made a very, which I won't repeat, he made a very cruel joke about Chelsea Clinton, right around the time she was graduating high school. So, you know, everything blew up around him on that. And so he quickly apologized for the joke. and shifted the narrative. I mean, and this was one of the things, again, like strategically, I guess, he was very, very savvy about shifting a media narrative, you know, turning a news cycle in his favor. So the story became, oh, God, I made this terrible mistake. I'm so sorry. It was really insensitive and horrible. Whereas some politicians, including the one in the White House at the moment, sometimes just have a instinct to just dig in. And the narrative just against them just deepens over a period of hours or days. And so he could switch the narrative very quickly, and it ends up becoming a testament to his character.
Which you're saying this was a savvy politician who knew how to create a certain narrative about himself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he could get you coming and going. I mean, I quoted yesterday a passage from a Walt Whitman poem, which I thought really fit him, and the line is from the poem is "I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes."
Mm. Right. That's right.
That's right. And let me quote something from Tim Hutchison, a former senator, saying about John McCain. I'll put this to you, Mickey Edwards. John put things in terms of black and white, right and wrong. If you disagree with him, you're wrong. He doesn't see that there could be legitimate differences of opinion that deserve respect. Nonetheless, this was a guy that seemed to reach across the aisle in certain instances to work with people whose opinions did not agree with his own.
Yeah, he wanted to get stuff done, and so he was quite good about working across the aisle. He was famously good friends with Ted Kennedy when most Republicans would have thought that was a terrible, terrible thing to do. But you know, he was somebody who was conservative, and when he had ideas, you know, he was hard to convince that he wasn't right. I mean, he was not only impetuous at times, but he was somebody who had a lot of certitude. I mean, he thought, you know, if he thought something, he thought it, and if you didn't agree with him, then there was something wrong with you.
I know people like that. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, there's a lot of
exactly.
But Mickey, that was part of his personality.
Sure, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation talking about John McCain. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with Mickey Edwards, was a Republican congressman from Oklahoma from 76 to 93. He served as chairman of the House Republican Policy Committee. Dick Pullman with us here in our Philadelphia studio writes the National Interest column for WHYY News, and we are doing what many people are doing this week, which is remembering the life of Senator John McCain. Let me read just a portion of his acceptance speech. This was the 2008 Republican National Convention. He spoke of his time as a prisoner of war in Vietnam and what happened after he refused his captor's offer to release him.
A lot of prisoners had it a lot worse than I did. I'd been mistreated before, but not as badly as many others. I always liked to strut a little after I'd been roughed up, to show the other guys I was tough enough to take it. But after I turned down their offer, they worked me over harder than they ever had before, for a long time, and they broke me. When they brought me back to my cell, I was hurt and ashamed, and I didn't know how I could face my fellow prisoners. The good man in the cell next door to me, my friend Bob Craner, saved me. Through taps on a wall, he told me I had fought as hard as I could. No man can always stand alone. And then he told me to get back up and fight again for my country and for the men I had the honor to serve with, because every day they fought for me.
I'll just put this to both of you. And Mickey, let me start with you first. And I've been, I think, like a lot of people, remembering and rereading what happened to John McCain when he was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And the suffering, the torture, the solitary confinement. How much do you think that made him the person that he was?
Well, I think it probably, had a tremendous effect on him, and I think there was a lot of it. We talk about the torture, but when I read about what happened, I never did talk to him about it, actually, but when you read about the torture, one of the things that stands out is the way that the prisoners in the Hanoi Hilton managed to find ways to communicate with each other. They were in solitary, but they were able to find out codes that they could tap on the walls, and the way people came to depend on each other for strength, just like the story in this clip you just played, where, you know, it was after he, you know, did confess. Yeah. You know, it was one of his friends there who stood with him and said, "You did the best you could." And I think that probably this sense of community, this sense of, hey, you know, he didn't ask any of these other people what party they belonged to or what religion they were or anything like that. And I think that had a real bearing on how he acted afterwards.
I do want to talk about Donald Trump, our president, and John McCain. But, Dick, anything you want to add to what Mickey just said there?
Yeah, just a few things. I mean, two things I think that the press found sympathetic about McCain or admired him about was what happened with him in prison. You know, frankly, most members of the press in my generation did not serve in the military.
Right.
And, you know, I think they respected him as a person who could withstand that kind of incredible treatment. And this is probably, if you had polled most members of the press of that generation and maybe most Americans at this point, they would have seen the Vietnam War as being a colossal mistake. And yet, despite that, you know, what he went through as a person, you know, I think that gained him press respect. And also the fact that he was in some of his political campaigns victimized by whispering rumors about that he was quote unquote nuts. And that
happened
was,
in South Carolina, right?
Yeah, it happened in South Carolina. It happened sometimes in Arizona as well. You know, he's nuts, and that's why his temper is what it is. And so, you know, he had to kind of, you know, he had to deal with that too. But you were talking about Trump.
I do want to get to him, but just to underscore that he and John Kerry worked to normalize relationships, the U.S. relationship with Vietnam.
That's a good point. And there was, yes, they worked to normalize relationships with Vietnam despite all that. And there was a very prominent anti-Vietnam War activist named David Ifshin, Ifshin, who in the 1980s McCain clashed with. And then he got to know Ifshin. And over the course of the next 10 years, I think until Ifshin died young, I believe, they became really close friends. Mm. And he was there when Ifshin was on his deathbed. And, you know, there's a whole sub-narrative about McCain and Ifshin. And it was all about normalization with Vietnam and putting the war behind us.
Well, let's talk about the president or candidate Trump and now President Trump and John McCain. This goes back 3 years, the summer of 2015, when candidate Donald Trump said that John McCain was not a war hero. He was a war hero because he was captured. I like people who weren't captured. And Mickey, I've said this several times since he said that absolutely outrageous thing, wondering how can Republicans, who would assume would support a POW, a veteran, a Republican, a conservative. I mean, in so many ways, he represented the base of the Republican Party. How could Republicans have voted for a man who so viciously discredited John McCain?
I have no idea how they could vote for him. I don't know how they could be operating the Congress today the way they do, with absolutely no respect for the obligations, constitutional obligations of Congress, how they are willing to sell their souls on almost anything in order to get a tax cut. I don't know. I think that Donald Trump has exposed, you know, what has gone wrong in the Republican Party, which seems to be absolutely lacking in principle. In that regard, you know, somebody like John McCain was a walking rebuke to what the Republican Party has become. And, you know, I can't Yeah, I can't answer. You asked me a question I can't
answer.
I've
asked it of many people in the last...
I can't understand it.
Yeah, in the last 3 years. Dick, do you have thoughts?
Well, I just find it, and maybe Mickey was one of the people who felt this way too, when Trump said that thing about McCain, I like people who have not, I like people who haven't been captured.
Right.
A lot of us felt at the time and wrote it that Trump had gone too far. Now he's finally gone too far. This is the time where he is capital G, capital T, capital F, gone too far. And then it was like nothing. Nothing happened. And, you know, that was a sign, or should have been, at least mm-hmm. in retrospect, that something completely different was working here in terms of the sensibility of many people in the – not everybody, but many people in the Republican base. You know, I think it's probably – there's been angry right and right-wing reaction to even McCain's dying – and death, and there's been some really ugly stuff online about it, you know. And some people are even saying, "Oh, he didn't really die, or he committed suicide." I mean, you know, there's all this stuff that's going on out there, perhaps what McCain said about President Trump in the wake of what happened in Helsinki, where he put out a really long, stinging statement, which I quoted yesterday and many people did, might have just exacerbated that reaction among the base, or many in the base, I should say.
Well, and even in the last couple of days since John McCain's death, one of the papers reporting that the White House wanted to put out a note or a message essentially honoring John McCain to be a hero. And reportedly the president didn't want that. He sent out a tweet sending his condolences to the McCain family, making no reference to John McCain. Mickey Edwards, I don't want to make this all about Donald Trump, but here we are. And there was a question about the flag at the White House also, the fact that the president of the United States will not be at the National Cathedral on Saturday. What do you make of all this?
Well, in terms of him not being at the cathedral, I think it was the McCain family.
Right.
And it was John, while he was still alive, who said, "I don't want him there." I think that Donald Trump, and who seems to have no value other than his own notoriety and looking tough and whatever, seems to have no values, no principles, and he has taken the Republican Party with him, and it has given up on almost everything it had stood for, you know, for a generation. And there's no excusing of it. I think people who see the Trump presidency as, oh, well, we've had bad moments before and we are going to survive this. It's not just Trump. It is the fact that so many Americans have been willing to accept to go along with this. That is a truly frightening thing about what we're learning about our country. And I find it really scary.
Really scary, because we could truly become this country. I mean, more than just 40%.
Yeah, Marty, if you read Madeleine Albright's book on fascism, which is just brilliant, what you're reminded of is all of the cases throughout history where countries have fallen prey to autocracy, authoritarian governments, often through the electoral process. That people, it wasn't that it was forced upon people, it was that people went along with it. They accepted it for whatever reasons. Mm-hmm. And that is a great warning. This is not a minor moment in our history. And unless we stand up to it in some way, I think we're going to be responsible for, you know, this great American experiment just going down the tubes.
That's really chilling. You want to add to that, Dick Palmer?
Yeah. Well, just to dovetail with what Mickey said, I did a program with Madeleine Albright in April.
At the Free Library.
At the Free Library, right. Yeah. And she drew so many people, they had to move it to Irvine Auditorium at Penn. And there was a quote in her book that she was quoting a – It was a German scholar who was basically saying that, you know, these things happen drip by drip, day by day, and where you don't necessarily notice it any more, I'm paraphrasing, but you don't notice it any more than a farmer noticing that the corn in his field is
right.
is growing. Yeah, it was early on in the book, and that really struck me. And I think what that really means is that the midterms, the 2018 midterms, are arguably, at least maybe perhaps since the Civil War, I don't know, the most important midterms in our history. And I think, that, you know, and I, you know, when you say that, it sounds partisan, like go Democrats. But this is, let's take the McCain metric here and say that it's country first. And that if you're going to have any kind of check and balance on what's going on in Washington, this is the time when voters have to weigh in favor of checks and balances and accountability, at least some modicum of it. And it's got to be now or never, because if it doesn't happen in November, I'm not sure when it does.
Picking up on that, Mickey Edwards, though, I mean, we hear from, you know, a lot of the members of the Republican Party and lauding John McCain for his positions and his maverickiness and all of that stuff. Will that, once he's buried in the ground, which is going to happen this weekend, does that all just go away?
Well, I'm afraid that most of them don't have the same courage that he showed. So what's going to happen is they're going to say this, but then they're going to look and say, you know, we have a terrible, I've talked about this on your program before, yep. We have just an absolutely terrible political system with the parties and the party primaries. You know, we were warned by Washington and Madison and Jefferson, you know, don't create parties, and we did it. And the result of it is these guys are now terrified of the people who vote in the primaries. And so, yes, they can praise McCain for his courage, but that doesn't mean that they're suddenly going to show courage themselves.
We're almost out of time here. Dick, let me just go back to the flag on the White House. And one can say, well, this is petty, mm-hmm. or it was a mistake, or mm-hmm. someone didn't do their job. Is that important to understand what that is all about? The fact that it was at half mast, and then Monday morning it mm-hmm. was at full mast, and then it was at half mast.
I mean, how hard is this?
Well, that's part of my question. How
you
hard
know,
is this?
I mean, it's, the tradition is you get the proclamation, and if you have a senator who dies in office, someone like that, the flags stay at half mast until internment, and Trump sort of flipped the program for a little while until the heat became too heavy. And you had the American Legion saying, please lower the flag and issue this proclamation. I mean, Senator Orrin Hatch just put out a statement a little while ago saying, quote unquote, it should have been automatic that all these things should have been happening. And this is the same Senator Orrin Hatch who just a few days ago said that, oh, I think President Trump's a much better – he's learned. He's a much better person now than he was a few years ago. So, you know, I'll let everybody else do the math of that. But I think to me it's like – and it's just my humble opinion. By acting so small, Trump made McCain even bigger.
Interesting. We're going to end on that note. Dick Pullman, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Martin.
And he writes the National Interest column for WHYY News, and he's been writing about the 2018 midterms for The Atlantic, and he's a writer in residence at the University of Pennsylvania. Mickey Edwards, thank you for joining us as well.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be back with you.
Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Was a Republican congressman from Oklahoma for 16 years and served as chairman of the House Republican Policy Committee. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez and Mike Fillers, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you for joining us.